Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Megillah Amud, 8 lines from the bottom. Yesterday we saw the Shita of Shmuel and other Amoraim that furthered the din of Shmuel, which is a person that lends money to his friend and takes a mashkon that is not worth the value of the loan, then it becomes a representative value, and if he loses the mashkon, he will not be able to collect any of the loan. He'll lose the entirety of the loan. The last thing we left off with was our Mishnah, which seems to indicate otherwise. Our Mishnah, he lost the mashkon, and yet he still has a claim against the debtor. If he lost the mashkon, according to Shmuel, there should be no claim against the debtor. The Gemara concluded yesterday, Matznitin b'deparish, Shmuel b'delo parish. So the way that we have it in our Gemara follows the girsa of Rashi, which is that in the Mishnah, he explicitly states that he's only taking it at its true value, whereas with Shmuel, he made no condition, and therefore, it's taken at its representative value. That's Rashi, and that means the default scenario is if you take something not valued at the level of the loan, that collateral takes on representative value. If you lose it, you lose the whole loan. If you stipulate otherwise, which is that you state specifically that you only want it at its true value, then you'll get it at its true value. You look in the Rabbeinu Kananel, the Baal Tosafot quoted in the Rabbeinu Tam as well, that they had the opposite girsa, and the girsa in the Gemara here was Matznitan b'delo parish. The Mishnah is a case where there was nothing said. Shmuel b'deparish. Shmuel is a case where you say it explicitly, and there being the default is that you take it at its actual value. Only if you accept it to be representative value will you be then responsible if you lose it to lose the whole loan, as the Baal Yad Tosafot phrase it. Without some sort of agreement, it makes no sense to have the creditor lose all his money over a mashkon that is not worth the same value as the loan itself. Why would anybody accept it at representative value as a default? It only makes sense if the person's made an acceptance to say that I'm willing to take it at its representative value, that you'll be responsible. That runs into other problems which we spoke about in the Baal Yad Tosafot yesterday. That's what we left off with, which is the Gemara now differentiates between Parish and the Lo Parish within Shmuel. The Gemara says here, Lema Ketanae. Let us say that the Shita of Shmuel is a Machloket Tanaim. Malvet Chavero Ala Mashkon, a person lends money to his friend using collateral. Bavada Mashkon. And then the Mashkon is lost. Yishva V'itol Et Ma'utav Divrei Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Eliezer believes that you take a Shvua, that you didn't steal the Mashkon, that you didn't do anything untoward to the Mashkon. And then you collect the entirety of your loan. The Baal Yad Tosafot point out over here, when you collect the entirety of your loan, according to Rabbi Eliezer, that includes Keneged HaMashkon. That means that you lose nothing. Even the loss of the Mashkon itself does not affect you. According to this, you would not deduct the value of the Mashkon. Or in essence, according to Rabbi Eliezer, he's a Shomer Chinam. And if he is a Shomer Chinam, he is Patur from Gneiva Vaveida. He just has to take a shvua that he did not mishandle the mashkon, and then he'll get paid all of the loan that was outstanding. The idea being that he only took the mashkon for what we call zichron dvarim ba'alma, just to remember that the loan was outstanding, because clearly the mashkon was not worth enough to take it as real value or even representative value. Therefore, Rabbi Eliezer says if you lose it, you just take a shvua that you did not mishandle it, and then you get all your money back. Rabbi Kiva Omer, you only lent me the money because you took the collateral. About a mashkon, abdu ma'utecha. You lost the mashkon, you're not going to get your money back. There's some correlation between the loan and the mashkon. And in order for him to get repaid, he's got to return the mashkon. You don't return the mashkon, you're not going to get paid. So the suggestion now is that Rabbi Akiva will be subscribing to the position of Shmuel, which means that if you take out a loan with the mashkon, then if the creditor loses the mashkon, then the debtor doesn't have to pay anything, and that's what Rabbi Akiva is saying over here. You don't return the mashkon, you're not going to get your money back. On the other hand, Rabbi Eliezer believes that that's not the case, and therefore, even if you lose the mashkon, you have a right to take a shvua and collect all of your money, and that will be against Shmuel's position. Now, depending on how you read the previous Gemara, will also influence over here what you think is happening. According to Rashi, who thinks that the previous Gemara, the default status is that you take it at representative value, then this scenario is a case, delo parish. It's a case where you made no statement, you made no acceptance. According to the Beno Kanano, the only time that you have accepted value is the parish, and you can see that in the Beno Kanano on the top of Mem Dalet Amud Aleph. He says, Kevin de parish, V'kible hakable. That even Rabbi Kiva over here, if he's in the Shita of Shmuel, would have to say that he was mekabelit as representative value. Just like Rabbeinu Hananel says, Shmuel believes you need to articulate that acceptance. So to over here, Rabbi Kiva's Shita, if you're going to believe that he's holding like Shmuel, you would have to then accept the item as representative value. So obviously it's all Derech Melitza. We're saying that Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Lezer are arguing in Shmuel. Shmuel is an Amora. Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Eliezer are Tanaim. It just means that Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Eliezer argued about this concept that Shmuel presents to us now. And then that means that Shmuel's concept is not accepted by everyone. There are Tanaim who disagree with it. That's what the Gemara is trying to establish over here. Aval, amalveh elef zuz bishtar, someone who borrows 1,000 zuz with a document, documenting the fact that the loan was outstanding. V'niach mashkom yadol. In addition to the shtar, he also gives him a mashkon. Divrei akol here means even Rabbi Eliezer, avad mashkon, avad ma'utav. You lose the mashkon, you lose your money. Rashi says the reason being that Rabbi Eliezer, modeh, shemashkon shkibel hachekein l'shem mashkon kiblo, erein etzarich lo, l'zikron dvarim, shtar lo ra'aya. The whole purpose, according to Rabbi Eliezer, of taking a mashkon as l'zichron dvarim, is in order to be a reminder that the loan is outstanding. That's why when you lose it, you don't lose all your money. Then, in this situation, we already have a shtar documenting the fact that the loan's outstanding. You don't need a zichron dvarim anymore. So why did you take a mashkon on top of the shtar? Not for zichron dvarim, but must be because you wanted collateral against the loan. And once you've done that, then that collateralization hits on representative value, because that's the default according to Rashi. If that's the situation, then even Rabbi Lezer will agree, if you lose the mashkon in that case, you're going to lose the entirety of the loan, because you didn't need to take a mashkon for Zichron Dvarim, you already had the shtar that did that for you. Rashi in Baba Metzia explains that when it comes to a shtar, you're entitled to Shibud Karkot. You actually have a lien on the debtor's property. So there you have what is otherwise good collateral, because then all of his property is now encumbered to you for repayment of this loan. So then when you go take a mashkon on top of that, it's not necessary. It was not offering you any protection that you didn't already have through the shtar, which includes the shibud karkaot, and therefore it's considered to be unnecessary. The fact that you took it must mean that you're taking it at representative value, and not at its underlying or true value. The Balei Tosafot disagree with this explanation of Rashi, and they indicate that the reasoning being that if you have a shtar, a person's not going to take the collateral at the time he extends the loan. He'll only take the collateral at a time later on when the debtor is beginning to default on the loan. Then he'll ask Beitin to come in and take collateral, and then it'll be subject to Rabbi Yitzchak that we'll see further on, which is that then you have a kinyan on it, and that's what makes him liable over here, even according to Rabbi Eliezer. And then the Gemara says, Hechidomi, what exactly is this scenario here? E, the Shavei Shir Zuzet, if the value of the mashkon equals the value of the loan, Maitamei, the Rabbi Eliezer, then Rabbi Eliezer's position makes no sense. Rabbi Eliezer's position makes sense that you claim that it's Zichron Devarim Ba'alma, when the mashkon is not at the value of the loan. You took it as a reminder that the loan's outstanding, a reminder that the debtor has to make repayment, but it's not worth the value of the loan. So that's why if you lose it, you're not going to lose your loan. On the other hand, if the mashkon is at the value of the loan, then of course the purpose of taking the mashkon is to be full value or the fair value of the loan. That means if you lose the mashkon, you're going to lose the loan, because you could have taken this mashkon in place of your loan, or in essence, it's not just a reminder, it's the full value of the loan. You're protected now. It's the way that you're protecting the value of the loan, and that means you accepted it at its true value, not at any representative value, and not as a zichron dvarim. El elav delo shavei shi'ur zuzei. Must be that the case that Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Lezer are speaking about is a case where the collateral is not equal to the value of the loan. Ube d'shmuel kamiflegei. And they are arguing in the position of Shmuel, or in essence, that's what we explained before in the Braita, that Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer must be arguing in Shmuel, because here you have a mashkon that is not at the value of the loan. And the question is, if you lose the mashkon, do you lose the entirety of the loan, or do you lose nothing? Rabbi Akiva says you lose the entirety of the loan. That would be like Shmuel. And Rabbi Eliezer says you lose nothing, and that will be against Shmuel. The Tosfot reads their machloket slightly differently over here, and he says that when the Gemara says, my lav below shavi, perish, my lav da filu below shavi, that they argue even when the collateral is not equal to the value of the loan. The Rabbi Kiva says that you lose everything like Shmuel. Rabbi Lezer lately the Shmuel, and Rabbi Lezer doesn't hold of Shmuel, a filu b'dishavi, ito kol ma'utav. Even if the collateral is equal to the whole value of the loan, he says that you will take a shvua and then collect all your money. Unlike what Rashi says over here, that if it was equal to the loan, then Rabbi Lezer would agree that you accepted it at its fair value and you would have lost everything. And in the Seifa, when it speaks about the shtar, unlike what Rashi says, that the reason that Rabbi Eliezer agrees there is because you're only taking it the zichron devarim ba'alma because you already have the shtar, the Balei Tosafot say, because it was taken with a shtar, you're not taking out the mashkon b'shat halva'ah. Rather, shalo b'shat halva'ah, because you don't need the mashkon because you have the shtar. It's only when he defaults that you go to get the mashkon. That mashkon is shalo b'shat halva'ah, and is subject to what we'll see in a second, Rabbi Yitzchak, who says that you have a kinyan, shalo b'shat halva'ah, on the mashkon. And that's why Rabbi Eliezer agrees in that way. But that also means that the Gemara upcoming, when it says that, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Kiva argue in this position, Rabbi Yitzchak, that's only b'shat halva'ah, when we think that that's what Rabbi Yitzchak is referring to, that they're arguing about it. But shalo b'shat halva'ah, even Rabbi Eliezer would agree with that position of Rabbi Yitzchak, that there is a kinyan. But then we make a statement, which is, lo, v'delo shavei kuli ama leit lehu d'shmuel. Gemara makes a very interesting statement, and here the Balei Tosafot in the previous Amud deal with whether that fits well according to the Girsa of Rashi, or does that feel better according to the Girsa of the Rabbeinu Chananel. But here the Gemara says that when the collateral is not equal to the loan, everyone agrees that we do not subscribe to Shmuel. Well, if everybody agrees that we don't subscribe to Shmuel, obviously the halacha is not going to be like Shmuel, and that's what the Balei Tosafot are trying to deal with, which is, wait a minute, if the Gemara is willing to entertain over here that nobody holds like Shmuel, that means that Shmuel is not the halacha. For that reason, the Rabbeinu Chananel believes the fact that the Gemara says, Kuli Ama late lehu d'Shmuel, and went in that direction, mitam zeh pasak Rabbeinu Chananel, dein halacha k'Shmuel, v'chein pa'ag, and same with the Baal halacha d'olot. And the Tosafot says, v'ein nira d'mikan ein raya. Says, I don't think this is a proof to that fact, because as the Balei Tosafot noted already, that you can't say Kuli Ama Ilehu d'Shmuel. And in addition, he says that the Gemara in Vav Metzia seems to equate Rabbi Yochanan's position with Shmuel. We have a machloket Rabbi Yochanan and Rav, halacha k'Rabbi Yochanan, which would mean that, again, we're supportive of Shmuel's view. And Rav Nachman subscribes to that position of Shmuel, which usually is the way that the halacha goes. In addition, later on, Tosafot the Shita Do, who says that the halacha is like Rabba, not like Rav Yosef, which means that Rabba has to set up the machloket Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Lezer in Shmuel, it'll turn out that Rabbi Kiva subscribes to the position of Shmuel and Rabbi Lezer doesn't. And that means that Rabbi Kiva is supportive and not Rabbi Eliezer. And since Rabbi Eliezer is Shmutiyu, the halacha is like Rabbi Kiva and like Shmuel. So Tosafot the Shita Do says if you paskin like Rabba over here, you're also going to paskin like Shmuel before, as we saw the Balei Tosafot favor, paskin like Shmuel. That also has impact in terms of how we paskin all the way along the sugya. That is true, because whenever it comes to machloket Rabbi Kiva and Rabbi Eliezer, we do not paskin like Rabbi Eliezer because he is a Shmuti. He was excommunicated for the incident in Bava Metzia with the Tarnur Shalach Nai, and therefore we won't paskin like Rabbi Eliezer. So halacha is going to be like Rabbi Akiva. So whomever Rabbi Akiva supports in these situations, the halacha is going to be like them. Gemara says, "V'halacha b'dishavei shirzuze." It's a case where the collateral is equal to the value of the loan. Ubed the Rabbi Yitzchak gamiflegay, and they argue within this issue of Rabbi Yitzchak. Damar Rabbi Yitzchak minayin the balchov shekune mashkon. How do you know that a balchov, a creditor, actually takes possession of the mashkon of the collateral? Shenemar, the pasuk says, udacha tiyeh tztaka. It will be considered or classified for you as you are doing tztaka. Emeinu kone mashkon tztaka minayin lo. If he doesn't take possession of the mashkon, where is there tztaka that is being done here? Mikan, the balchov, shekone mashkon. That shows you, or that proves to you, that the balchov is taking possession of the mashkon. So if you were to look at the creditor in this situation, the creditor is actually doing two things. He is granting a loan to the debtor. In addition to that, he's taking the mashkon as collateral. And then that mashkon as collateral, the Torah has obligations on him to return that collateral whenever the debtor needs it. So if he took his nighttime clothing or his nighttime sheets, every night he has to return it to him and then go back and take it every morning. And vice versa, if he took something that was from the daytime, one of his tools that he needs or implements that he needs, then he has to return it to him each morning and then take it back at night. So here the creditor is doing two things. He's lending money and he's also taking care of the mashkon in a way where he has to return it, take it, return it, take it. So Rabbi Yitzchok says the fact that it's deemed that it's tzedakah when you give back the mashkon shows that you must have ownership in the mashkon. And that is because there's an obligation on an individual when he takes the mashkon. If the individual needs the object at night, to return it at night. If he needs it during the day, to return it during the day. And that's the tzedakah that you're doing. But Rabbi Yitzchok says that's only true if you own it. The way that the Balei Tosafot express it is, tzedakah is only called tzedakah when you actually give up money or you lose money on it. So here, where you have to make an effort and give up your ownership in this item, that is called tzedakah. If you didn't own it, it wouldn't be called tzedakah. And that's why, as the Rabbeinu Chananel says over here, that im eino koneh tzedakah minayin. If you don't take possession of the mashkon, where is the tzedakah? Ela mikan the bachov shekoneh mashkon. That shows you that the bachov takes possession of the mashkon. Ukeshim makziro the balav. Mimono notein lo. And when he returns it to the Baalim, then he gives him his money. For that reason, you are considered to be someone who is given tzedakah. Or the way that the Ritva states it is, if it wasn't yours, then it would be gemilot chesed, what you're doing for this individual. But now that it's yours, that's called tzedakah. And that's why Rabbi Yitzchok proves from that you must own the mashkon in this situation. Now, the question as to what your level of responsibility is, if you look in the Balei Tosafot, he says, Mikan the Bachov shekoneh mashkon. Well, if you assume that you have a kinyan on the mashkon, that means that you become the owner or the balim over the mashkon. If you're the balim over the mashkon, then you should be responsible for everything or anything that happens to it because everything is a loss to you. On the other hand, the Balei Tosafot say, Nira, Dein mitchayeh ba'unstin. Over here, you're not chayav for things that are out of your control. Elehavi kemo shomer sachar. You are deemed to be a shomer sachar. He says, "Hey muchach bal hagalot gedolot to shomer sachar avi." Everybody agrees that he's classified as a shomer sachar. So Tosafot limits the liability of the individual here when he's koner the mashkon is that you are limited liability because you're classified really as a shomer sachar. When we speak about koneh here, we mean koneh to a point, but not koneh to absolutely where you are completely responsible for it. On the other hand, there are those that believe that when you say koneh mashkon, that means you fully are responsible for the item here, even for onsin. Even for items that are out of your control, you are still responsible for the item, and that's what it means. Koneh mashkon literally means that you own it. And that is the view of Rashi in Bava Metzia. Rashi says that you are fully responsible for the item, because you are koneh the mashkon, and therefore if anything happens to it, you're going to be responsible. Many Rishonim, including the Balei Tosafot, he got there, the Bahag, the Rimigash, many argue with Rashi on that point and say that he's only a shomer sachar. So now the reason is that you have to differentiate between a shoel, someone who's a borrower, and someone who is a shomer sachar. Shomer sachar is someone who gets benefit, they get paid for it, so they're a shomer sachar, but not all the benefit is theirs. They are simply a shomer. On the other hand, a shoel is chayav and unseen because kol hahana'a shelo. All the benefit is his. Everything accrues to him. So what the Rishonim point out over here is to deem him a shoel would not be correct. Because in this case, you can't say about the malved that kol hahana'a shelo. All the benefit is his. There are a number of things that prevent all the benefit being his. First of which is, he lent money in order to hold on to this mashkon. Number two is that the loveh, debtor, has a right to determine when this transaction ends. He has the option to terminate this relationship at any point. He can say, I paid you the money, give me the mashkon back. It's not the malveh's choice, it's the loveh's choice as to when to terminate the transaction. That's another reason that not all the hana'a is accruing to the malveh. And the last thing is that, does the malveh have a right then to utilize the mashkon in the interim? When he has the mashkon, is it all his that he has a right to use it as he pleases? How much of a kinyan do you have over here? Many Rishonim believe that you do have enough of a kinyan to use it for kiddushin, but nevertheless, you don't have enough of a kinyan to use it or to utilize it yourself. So you have certain rights in the mashkon, but those are temporary rights, but rights that do come in the form of a kinyan and real ownership in the mashkon. So that would mean that you don't have kol hana'ah shelo. For that reason, the majority of Rishonim believe that the person is deemed, like the Baal Tosafot say over here, as a shomer sachar and not a shoel, because it's not kol hana'ah shelo. There is some hana'ah to him. There is some benefit to him, and that would be the equivalent of getting paid to be a shomer. But there's not enough benefit where you can say kol hana'ah shelo. And for that reason, you're deemed a shomer sachar and not a shoel, and you would not be chayab in onsin. Lema, the Rabbi Yitzchak, Tanayei. Let us suggest that the memra of Rabbi Yitzchak is a machloket Tanaim. Again, here, the statement is difficult because the
Gemara just stated that it's a machloket Tanaim in this matter, and now they're saying, let it be a machloket Tanaim. So there are some who want to take this out of the Girsa. Others try to give a difficult explanation for it, but we'll just read it as if it's a continuation of the previous statement, that if you establish that it's a machloket Tanaim, then now you have an Amora who has to align his position with the different Tanaim, and it cannot be reconciled with all the different Tanaim.
And therefore here, the machloket between Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Akiva would be about Rabbi Yitzchak. Are you considered to have a kinyan, or are you not considered to have a kinyan? If you're considered to have a kinyan on the mashkon, then you're going to be responsible for the mashkon. So Rabbi Akiva, who says that you lose everything when you lose the mashkon, he says you made a kinyan on the mashkon. Your kinyan on the mashkon thereby makes you responsible for the item, and if you don't return it, you're not going to get your money back. On the other hand, Rabbi Eliezer says you do not have a kinyan in this object. Since you don't have a kinyan in the object, then your loan repayment is not dependent on this object. Even if you lose the object, you're still going to get your money back. It kind of remains in the possession of the debtor. If that's the case, even if you lose it, you're still entitled to your repayment of your loan. Gemara says, Imo dama Rabbi Yitzchak shemashkeno shelo b'shat halvah. Rabbi Yitzchak's din is stated in a case where you took the collateral after the loan was extended. If you look at the psukim from where Rabbi Yitzchak is quoted, the Chati Etztaka, the psukim before say, "Bechutz tamod, stand outside, ba'ish," the ish being the shliach, baiting, and that the debtor and takes out collateral. This is a situation in which the collateral is being imposed post the extension of the loan. It might even be that the person is defaulting on the loan at this point in time, and that's where there is a kinyan over here. But the case of Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer, if you read the case there, hamalveh et chaviro ala mashkon. That's someone who took a mashkon at the time of the extension of the loan. So there are different issues. You can't say they're arguing Rabbi Yitzchak. Rabbi Yitzchak's din is when you take a mashkon, shelo b'shat alva. Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Eliezer are arguing in a case when you take the mashkon b'shat alva. So now the distinction seems almost counterintuitive at this point, because it would make sense that if you took a mashkon, shelo b'shat alva, and we consider it as if it's a kinyan, then certainly if you took a mashkon at the time that the loan's extended, that should be a kinyan, because there the lovez agree. In the case of b'shat alva, the debtor agrees to give you the mashkon. In the case of Rabbi Yitzchak, where he's taking it after the loan's extended, it's against the will of the debtor, and you're taking it, and there you see you have a kinyan, it should be achat kama v'kama. So what the Ritva suggests is, at the time, shelo b'shat alva, that's something where the person is intent on getting the mashkon because there's a problem of default that's going on. In that case, he makes a full kinyan on it. On the other hand, if it's at shat halva'ah, then the individual takes the mashkon, not because he really believes the person can default on it, but he wants a lien on something. He wants to have some ability or security that he can take. So he's not thinking of it as a mashkon in the sense of kinyan. He's thinking of it as a mashkon in the sense of shibud. Collateral that's taken there is more likely to be something that is a zichron dvarim ba'alma versus a collateral that's taken when the person is failing to pay, where there clearly you're taking it in order to ensure a payment and you're using it as leverage to get your money back. In that case, it's more likely that you're going to have a kinyan. And for that reason, Rabbi Yitzchak's din only applies shelo b'shat alva'ah, but b'shat alva'ah, it does not apply. Now, the Ritva points out that that's only the Hava meaning of the Gemara here, but according to the Ramban and others, after the Gemara goes through this and the Gemara leaves this behind, it also leaves behind this suggestion of Shelo B'Shat Halva'ah, and therefore according to them, even B'Shat Halva'ah, Rabbi Yitzchak's din applies, although according to other Rishonim, this differential remains intact even after the Gemara rejects this stage of the understanding of Rabbi Yitzchak. So now Gemara says, Ela mashkeno shlo b'shat havato kuliyama lo plige. You take the collateral when it's not at the time of the loan extension. Everybody agrees to itlehu to Rabbi Yitzchak, that Rabbi Yitzchak din applies. B'hacha b'mashkeno b'shat havato. Here's a case where he took the mashkon at the time of the extension of the loan. U'bishomer aveda kamiflige. And they're arguing about the case of Shomer Aveda. Ditmar, we have a Machloket Amoraim with regards to Shomer Aveda. Rabba Amar Kishomer Chinam. Rav Yosef Amar Kishomer Sachar Dami. Rabba believes that you are a Shomer Chinam, and Rav Yosef believes that you're a Shomer Sachar. Now, a Shomer Aveda is someone who found a lost object, and now they're taking care of that lost object on behalf of the Balim until the Balim can come and make the claim for that object. So now, why would you be classified as a Shomer Sachar? All you're doing is providing a service to someone else, and you're not getting paid for it. Nobody is sending you a check saying, thank you for taking care of my Avedah. You're doing the mitzvah that the Torah says, which is, when you find something that's lost, you take it into your house, you take care of it, until the person shows up. So, seemingly, Rabba makes a lot of sense over here, which is, you are a Shomer Chinam. Where does Rav Yosef get this concept that you should be deemed to be a Shomer Sachar? The answer is what's called Pruta de Rav Yosef. Pruta de Rav Yosef is a concept where the Gemara speaks about this in other places, which is that if you're Osek B'Mitzvah, if you're involved in a mitzvah, then you're Patur from another mitzvah. Osek B'Mitzvah, Patur min a mitzvah. If you're engaged in the activity of taking care of this Aved on behalf of someone else, and at the same time, a poor person comes to the door and knocks on the door and is asking for money, at that point, you're not going to have to go and stop doing what you have to do with the Aveda and take care of the Ani. And so you have a savings of money that you're not going to give tzedakah in that case because you're exempted from engaging in the mitzvah of giving away your money. And that is Pruta de Rav Yosef. Tosafot and Baba Kama and other places deals with the fact that if you believe that a Shomer Aveda is deemed to be Osek B'Mitzvah, and therefore, if the poor person shows up at your door, you're exempt from giving him money, then he says that, why does anybody have to do any mitzvah? Right now, you have a mezuzah on the door to your house. You're doing a mitzvah. A mosik b'mitzvah. I should be potur min a mitzvah. I shouldn't have to give any money to an ani. I shouldn't have to do any other mitzvah. I'm engaged in the mitzvah of mezuzah on my door. Tosafot makes the distinction that you are noting, which is that there's a difference between engaged, ha'osik b'mitzvah, being engaged in a mitzvah, or a mitzvah that you just simply accomplish, but you're not engaged in the mitzvah. And Tosafot says that the ptur of osik mitzvah, potur min a mitzvah, only applies when you're engaged in the mitzvah, not when you are passively accomplishing the mitzvah. So if you have the mitzvah mezuzah, if you're putting up the mezuzah, that's called osik b'mitzvah. Once the mezuzah is up, even though you have what's called a mitzvah tmidit, you have a continuous mitzvah, that mitzvah itself will not exempt you from other mitzvot, because you could do both mitzvot at the same time. They're not mutually exclusive. So therefore, by the case of Shomer Aveda, so Shomer Aveda is also a passive mitzvah. You took the item into your house, it's sitting on the shelf. What are you doing? The Rabbi Tosafot explained that when it comes to an Aveda, there's also interim times when you have to take care of the Aveda. First of all, if you have a sheet that you're taking care of for someone, every 30 days or so, you need to shake it out, you need to air it out, so it doesn't get bad, so the moths don't get to it. So there is activity involved in being a Shomer Aveda. What he says is, Pruta de Rav Yosef applies during that period of time. When the Aveda is sitting on your shelf, you have no ptur, you're not considered to be an Osek B'Mitzvah. But in those moments where you engage with the Aveda to take care of it, then you will get the exemption. That exemption then allows you to be ptur from another mitzvah, including the mitzvah of tzedakah. And that money savings is what makes you into a Shomer Sachar, according to Rav Yosef. The Bali Tosafot over here actually notes something interesting, which is the Gemara in Nidarim and in Rosh Hashanah says that a person who is mudar mehana, person who takes a neder that he will not get hana from an individual, that person is allowed to do a mitzvah for them. For instance, if you need to hear the shofar, and you're mudahar hana from this individual, you can still blow the shofar from that individual, because we say, mitzvot lav lehenot nitnu. Mitzvot are not given to get hana from them, and so therefore, if he blows the shofar to be motziyu, that's not a violation of the neder. Tosafot says, why not? Maybe when you're blowing the shofar on behalf of this individual, then you are patur from giving money to an ani. You're now engaged in a mitzvah with someone who you are mudar hana'a from, and you're providing from a service that's actually beneficial because of pruta derav Yosef. So he says over here, Yesh Lamar, the shiny shomer aveda mashkon. Person engaged with an aveda mashkon, tikama pe'amim shitasakek balashotcha letzorcha ulatznia. There are numerous occasions in which he's going to engage the aveda and the mashkon. Ipater le'itenlo. That pruta derav Yosef will come up. Aval hotam yachol kavein litkoa v'litbo b'makom shlo yavo shamani b'oto sha'a. When it's a one-time mitzvah, like going to the shofar or going to the mikveh, in those instances there, it's a one small moment in time, and you can have it that it doesn't turn out at a time when the ani is going to show up at your door to come and get money, especially given that you're blowing the shofar in Rosh Hashanah, it's very unlikely that the ani is coming to your door at that time. Given that, it will not be subject to pruta derav Yosef, versus the case here by Aveda Mashkon, where you have a cycle, or a continuous cycle of engaging in the item, where you become a shomer sachar, because in all likelihood you're going to bump into pruta derav Yosef. The Gemara does bring an alternative to the explanation why you're a shomer sachar, one of which we explained, which was pruta derav Yosef. The other one is that mishubuda deoraita, the Torah imposes upon you the obligation to take care of it, and that's why you become a shomer sachar, because of the imposition of the Torah, not because of pruta derav Yosef. So now we have here a machloket Rav Yosef and Rabbah about whether shomer avedah is considered to be a shomer sachar or shomer chinam. In our case as well, when it comes to the mashkon, when you lent out the money ala mashkon, you are the equivalent of a shomer avedah. You are watching this because everybody agrees to Rabbi Yitzchak, and therefore, if you are now extending a loan ala mashkon, you've done a mitzvah, and now you're watching the mashkon. What is your status when you're taking care of this mashkon? Are you deemed to be a shomer chinam because you're not getting paid for watching this mashkon? You actually have to give up money to get this mashkon. You have to lend the guy money. Or do we view it that when you have this mashkon, you're a shomer sachar because you are now patur min ha-mitzvah? If you have to engage in the mashkon, if you have to take care of the mashkon in certain instances, then you're going to have the pruta derav Yosef, like the shomer avedah, and therefore you're going to be exempt from making that payment to the ani, and that makes you into a shomer sachar. So as Rashi notes over here at the top, he says, you are a shomer sachar dami, schar mitzvah, umalveh ala mashkon, nami mitzvah ovud. Person who lends on a mashkon is definitely doing a mitzvah, and therefore the schar mitzvah that you're getting is considered to make you into a shomer sachar. That's the way that Rashi terms it. And therefore, the situation must be that the tzedakah, what we deem the tzedakah over here, is the loan that you extended. And that by lending this individual money, you actually gave him tzedakah. Remember, in their day, you don't get to charge interest for the extension of the loan. You're giving him money, you're basically trusting him, giving him money, and you get nothing in return. The only thing, if you're lucky, is that you get your money back. Otherwise, you're going to lose money. And that's why it's classified or considered to be tzedakah. Rashi says that lending money is a mitzvah. Even when you lend money with a mashkon, it's deemed to be a mitzvah. He seems to indicate that you're made into a shomer sachar because schar mitzvah, umalvela mashkon, nami mitzvah ovid. That you're doing a mitzvah, and that's the schar that you're getting, and that's what makes you into a shomer sachar. On the other hand, the mainstream view, and that is what the Rabbeinu Chananel quotes over here, is Zoe Pruta de Rav Yosef. That this is based on the Gemara Bava Metzia that explains about Pruta de Rav Yosef, the Karmelon. It's because of the fact that you don't have to make payment to the ani in those situations. Gemara says, Lema derav Yosef tanayehi. Let us say now that derav Yosef's position of whether you're shomer sachar or not is actually a machloket tanaim. Rabbi Akiva believes that you are a Shomer Sachar. If you are a Shomer Sachar, then if you lose the object, you're responsible for it. And that's why you're going to lose your money. The mashkon was worth the value of the loan. You're not going to get anything back. On the other hand, Rabbi Lezer believes that you are a Shomer Chinam. And since you are a Shomer Chinam, you are patur from Geneva Vaveda. And if you take a shvua saying that you didn't do anything wrong with it or you didn't mishandle it, you will get your money back. So that would be the suggestion now that they're arguing with the Rabbi Yosef. Rashi notes over here, Lema de Rabbi Yosef Tanaihi, the Milta de Rabba Vadai Tanaihi. Because Rabba's position is definitely a Makhloket Tanaim, because Rabba, who says you're Shomer Chinam, can't fit into the Shita of Rabbi Akiva, who says that you lose everything. So that means that Rabbi Akiva has to hold like Rabbi Yosef, and Rabba's position is that of Rabbi Eliezer. If you align the positions that way, you would come to the conclusion that the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef. Rabbi Yosef's position accords with Rabbi Akiva, and Rabba's position accords with Rabbi Eliezer. And that's what many of the Geonim and Rishonim say. Halacha ke Rabbi Yosef. Even though we have a Mesorah, Rabba ve Rabbi Yosef, halacha ke Rabba. Whenever you have a Malchok between Rabba and Rabbi Yosef, halacha is like Rabba. This would be an exception to that rule, because over here, Rabbi Akiva is aligned with Rabbi Yosef's position, and Rabba is aligned with Rabbi Eliezer, and halacha is not like Rabbi Eliezer, because he is Shmuti. And therefore, many conclude that the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef. You can see that at the bottom of the Rabbeinu Chananel, V'hatitnani uve'ol ha-mashkon shomer sachar, kaimelan lo shna mashkono b'shat halva, lo shna mashkono shelo b'shat halva, doesn't matter when you take the mashkon, v'lo shna yivau ma'ot, lo shna yivau perot, b'kulu shomer sachar havi. In all these cases, he's deemed to be a shomer sachar, or in essence, Rabbeinu Chananel is paskening like Rabbi Yosef. And as the Tosfot point out, that's based on the fact that the Gemara in Nidorim says the Kuliyama itlu the Pruta de Rav Yosef, that everybody subscribes to this position or this Pruta de Rav Yosef, which would make you into a Shomer Sachar. The Tosfot in the previous Amud spends a lot of time trying to undermine that, and he believes that the halacha here is like Rabba. We have a Mesorah, Rabba ve Rav Yosef, halacha ke Rabba. Whenever you have a malchog between Rabbi and Rav Yosef, the halacha is like Rabba. With the exception of three cases of Sadeh Inyan Numechta, and this is not one of those exceptional cases. And even though there are some people who explain that that principle of Rabbi Rav Yosef, halacha Rav Yosef, with these three exceptions, only applies in Baba Batra, nevertheless, the Baya Tosafot over there in Baba Batra dismissed that view. Therefore, Tosafot heavily favors saying that the halacha is ke Rabba and not like Rav Yosef. Bali Tosfot say that the Gemara in Nidorim is not a good proof, because even Rabba agreed to that position. He agrees that if you're metapa over the Avedo and an Oni shows up, that you are patur. The argument between Rabbi Yosef and Rabba is that in significant an amount of money or hana'ah to deem you a Shomer Sachar. Rabbi Yosef says yes. Rabba says no. Although the Bali Tosfot do seem to point out that even Rabba would agree with Rabbi Yosef in the case where you're dealing with an aveda that requires significant investment or taking care of, like an animal, then Rabba would agree with Rabbi Yosef that you are a Shomer Sachar. And therefore, he explains the Gemara, for Rabba, there is no machloket over here. According to Rabba, the issue is not about Shomer Chinam. Everybody will agree that you're Shomer Chinam, and he'll say that Bishmuel Kamiflege. The Rabbi Lez and Rabbi Kiva argue about the issue of Shmuel, and that everybody agrees with me. Given that, you can have Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva be within the position of Rabba. And if that's the case, then we're back to square one, which is when you have Rabba and Rabbi Yosef, who's the halacha like? And we're going to pass on the halacha like Rabba. Since Rabba can align his position with Rabbi Akiva, therefore the Bali Tosafot believe that the halacha is like Rabba in this case. So that is a major machloket in the Rishonim as to whether the halacha here is like Rabba, that you're Shomer Chinam, which is the view of the Bali Tosafot, versus many other Rishonim who believe that the halacha is like Rabbi Yosef, because Rabba is a machloket Tanaim, and he would have to hold like Rabbi Eliezer. At the end, the Balei Tosafot adds in a little thing here, which is, the Pruta Rabbi Yosef lo shayach bakum. This din of Pruta Rabbi Yosef does not apply to non-Jews. The leka mitzvah, because there's no mitzvah involved in lending them the money or taking care of their aveda. But afilu shomer sachar gamur la'akum lo mechayev. And he says, not only that, even if you were to deem it a mitzvah, a Jew will not be a full-fledged Shomer Sechar to a non-Jew, because the Parsha says Re'eyu. And just like Re'eyu eliminates Hekdesh, so too Re'eyu eliminates an Akum. And that means that the Parshia of Shomer Sechar is not relevant to an Akum, unless, of course, you have a contractual obligation that explicitly states the obligation. But the default would not be to put them under the Parshia of Shomer Sechar that's found in the Torah. Gemara says, "Lo, Shomer Abeda, the Kulei Ama Itlehu de Rav Yosef." And here is another thing that backs up the position of those that think that the halacha is like Rav Yosef, which is the Gemara just concluded. Now, don't say that Rav Yosef is a machloket Tanaim, but rather everybody holds in Shomer Abeda like Rav Yosef. That would imply that the Gemara thinks the halacha is like Rav Yosef, and that's supportive of those Rishonim that believe that the halacha is like Rav Yosef. This is a case where the creditor needs the mashkon. He's going to utilize the mashkon while he's waiting for the repayment of his debt. The question now, and this is what Rashi says, when you lend out money because you need the mashkon, so the ishtamesh bo menachelo menachov d'mei schirut the mashkon. And what the creditor will do is he'll deduct the rental or the usage or utility of the item that he's getting from the loan that is outstanding. And the question is, when you have a personal benefit here because you're using it, does that now deem it no longer a mitzvah, but rather you're doing it because of the utility that you're getting out of this object? You lent it money so that you can get the object to use the object, and as you use the object, you're going to defease the loan based on the value of what you're using in the object. So is that considered to be a personal transaction, or is that still deemed to be a mitzvah? That's the way Rashi learns it. The Balei Tosafot are bothered by that, because why isn't it a mitzvah anymore? If lending money is a mitzvah, you lend money over here. The usage of the mashkon, you're defeasing the loan based on the usage of the mashkon. That means you're helping the debtor out. He's paying down the loan by you are utilizing the mashkon. You're actually doing a tova for him in that way. So why isn't that considered to be a mitzvah anyway? And therefore, the Balei Tosafot quote the Rabbeinu Kananel's view here. Rabbeinu Kananel perish tzarich mashkon eino rotzeh lehalvot lo below mashkon. So he says that the Rabbeinu Kananel says the reason it may not be considered a mitzvah over here is because you wouldn't lend him the money without the mashkon. The only reason you're lending him the money is to get to the mashkon, and therefore your mitzvah is not really there, because if he doesn't hand you the mashkon, you're not going to hand him the money. That means your loan is premised on the mashkon and not premised on your doing a mitzvah. Although he says, V'kasha, da'atu mishum hachi, lav mitzvah kovid. Just because you want to protect your loan and not lose all your money, or you need the collateral, that takes away from the mitzvah. Just because you have some personal interest in the matter doesn't necessarily negate the fact that you are doing a mitzvah. So there are weaknesses in both positions. Rashi's position is that you are lacking a mitzvah here because you are utilizing it and defeasing the loan. The Balei Tosafot say that's somewhat problematic, because the Gemara in other places says that when you do that, you consider as if you're returning an aveda to the debtor. You're helping him out. You're actually benefiting him when you do that, because then he won't have the loan outstanding at the end. On the other hand, the Rabbeinu Kananel's explanation is a little difficult, because he demands a mashkon at the time of the loan. That somehow diminishes the fact that you're doing a mitzvah. Just because you are prudent about lending the money and take a mashkon, that doesn't make it into a mitzvah. Why should that detract from the fact that it's a mitzvah? But you have to use one of those two explanations in order to understand why the Gemara here has a machloket. Although the Ritva slightly rewords the question of the Gemara, not about the underlying loan being a mitzvah, but rather it's a question that when you're mitapel in that mashkon now, does that classify as a mitzvah pruta de Rav Yosef? Because now at this point you're metabol in the mashkon for your own benefit. And so maybe that's not classified as a mitzvah anymore to make you patur from pruta de Rav Yosef, and then you would not be a shomer sachar. So it's not a question about the underlying halva'ah, but rather a question about whether your isuk, your involvement with the mashkon, is classified as a mitzvah at this point. Marsavar mitzvah kovid. Rabbi Akiva believes that you're doing a mitzvah over here, even when you need the mashkon. According to Rashi, you're going to utilize it. According to the Rabbeinu Kananel, you wouldn't extend the loan without the mashkon. And therefore, if you lose the mashkon, you're a shomer sechar. And since the value of the mashkon was equal to the value of the loan will be forgiven, or you won't have to pay. Marsavar la mitzvah gavid. And Rabbi Eliezer, on the other hand, thinks you're not doing a mitzvah, Because you have personal interest in the matter over here. And since you're not doing a mitzvah, you are considered a shomer chinam. If you lose it then, or if it gets lost, you are patur, and you can still make the claim for the loan. Lema kitanaye. So the Gemara leaves that behind and now says, let us go back and suggest that Shmuel Din is like this machloket tanaim. Hamavet chaviro ala mashkon, v'nichnasa shmita. Person lends money with collateral, and then the shmita year comes. The shmita year in general is mishamet. It wipes out all outstanding loans. So now when you lend with a mashkon, that actually changes the dynamic. Apo pishinu shaveh ela palga. Even though the collateral is only worth half of the value of the loan, eino mishamet does not wipe out the loan, divrei Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. That is Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's position, that if you have any collateral, then you do not lose the loan on the Shemitah. The reason being, one of two reasons, Rashi quotes over here, the reason being that there's only a restriction on Shemitah of lo igos, that you can't pressure the debtor to repay. But since you have collateral, you're not going to be pressuring him to repay. And given that, there's no violation over here of taking the loan because there's no lo igos. That's the way Rashi learns it. Other Rishonim suggest that it's only tashmet yadcha. That the only question is when you do not have the repayment in hand, that's where the loan is forgiven. But over here, when you have collateral in hand, then you've already, in a sense, collected the loan. And that's why the loan is not forgiven on the Shemitah. If the mashkon equals the full value of the loan, then it protects it from Shemitah. If it does not equal the value of the loan, then it does not protect you in the Shemitah. The Tanakama, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, when he says that the Shvit doesn't wipe it out, what does he mean? If he believes that it's only up to the value of the collateral, you're going to tell me then that Rabbi Yehuda Nasi believes that you get no protection whatsoever from the collateral? Then why bother taking the mashkon if it provides you with no protection or no monetary benefit? Must be that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel believes that when you have a mashkon, even though it doesn't equal the whole value of the loan, it's deemed to be keneged the whole loan. If that's the case, then the Shemitah is not going to wipe it out. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda Nasi believes that you only get protection up to the value of the collateral. The collateral equals the loan, you're fully protected. Equals half the loan's protected, the other half the loan is not protected. That's basically Shmuel's din. Do we view collateral that is not at the value of the loan to be representative value, and we make it now equal to the entirety of the loan? This connected the whole loan. Or do we say that you look at it at its true value? Yehuda Nasi seems to say you look at it at its true value. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel seems to say that it is representative value. Shmuel Kamivligay. Tosafot does point out over here that according to the one who does not subscribe to Shmuel, then when you lose the mashkon, you actually lose nothing. We saw that in Rabbi Eliezer before. But over here, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says when you have the mashkon, you still get protection up to the fair value of the mashkon. Which actually makes it that it's not like those people who disagree with Shmuel. So what the Baal Tosafot point out here is that when a person takes a mashkon, he's not taking it to lose money. So that means if he loses it, he's patur from making repayment or restitution on it, and he'll get his full loan repaid. But it also means that if it's Shemitah year, it will protect him up to the value of the mashkon. He'll get the upper hand in both situations, because the purpose of taking a mashkon is to benefit the malveh. That's what Tosafot says over here. Those that disagree with Shmuel will say that the fair value is protected for the Shemitah. And those over there that disagree with Shmuel will say that if you lose the mashkon, then you're not out any money, and he has to repay the entirety of the loan as long as you didn't mishandle the mashkon. Gemara says, lo, deolam kinegdo. Case here is that you're only protected, according to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, for the level of the collateral itself. Ubahaka miflegate. And this is the machlok between them. Tanakama savar kinegdo. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, the Tanakama, believes that only up to the value of the collateral are you protected on Shemitah. That even up to the value of the collateral, it is also lost on the Shemitah. You said before, if he doesn't get any protection, then why did he bother to take the mashkon? The zichron devarim ba'alma. In order to remind him about the outstanding loan, or to remind the debtor that he owes him the money, but not because of any underlying value that is associated with the Mishkan. The Nasi sees the Mishkan has nothing to do with the loan itself. It's just a mechanism for remembering the loan. A mechanism to help remind the debtor that he owes the money. But it's not connected to the loan at all. And therefore, if the Shemitah comes, the loan will be wiped out. And if the Mishkan is lost, obviously you're not going to lose the loan. On the other hand, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, the Tanna Kamma, believes that the Mishkan has a fair value. Whatever that fair value is of the Mishkan, it will protect your loan against being lost in the Shemitah. Anything above that will be lost in the Shemitah. But that also means if you lose the Mishkan, you're only going to lose the value of the Mishkan in the debt, but not the entirety of the debt. And that means that neither of them paskin like Shmuel. And here, once again, the Gemara is saying, or setting up Tanaim, that neither of them subscribe to Shmuel. That's what the Gemara said before. Neither of them are subscribing to Shmuel, which makes you think that the Gemara is not paskin like Shmuel, which Tosafot on the bottom of Mem Gimel Amud Bet takes issue with. And therefore you have to say when the Gemara is dismissing Shmuel over here, it's not to say that we don't hold like Shmuel, just saying that it doesn't have to be that the din of Shmuel is a machloket tanaim, but not to say that they're dismissing that position of Shmuel. Okay, with that we finish Shvuat Adayanim. Adran Alach, Shvuat Adayanim. The next Mishnah is a list of Shvuot in the Mishnah that are Shvuot Derabanan. Again, we discussed this earlier. Shvuot as Seif was a much later institution, Derabanan. These are earlier instituted Shvuot that are the Shvuot HaMishnah, but they all are Shvuot Derabanan. The key element is that you are Nishba Minotel. In a Torah, the only Shvuot that you take are Nishba Minitar. Take a Shvuot to release yourself from an obligation. Over here, all the Shvuot that are mentioned in this Mishnah are Nishbaim Minotlim. They are taking a Shvuot and they are going to collect based on that. And the Mishnah has a list of those items. We will go through the first two or three of them and leave the remainder for tomorrow, since the Mishnah continues all the way to the bottom of the next Amud. But that's just the broader background of what's happening over here. Kol nishbaim shebetorah, nishbaim velo mishalmim. Anybody who takes a shvua min a Torah is taking a shvua to exempt themselves from payment. Ve'elu nishbaim venotlim. And here's a list of people who take a shvua and collect. Obviously implied in that is that these are not shvot min a Torah. These are shvot that were instituted midrabanan, but early. I mean, these are shvot ha-mishnah. Ha-sakhir, ha-nigzal, ha-nechbal, she-negdo chashur ha-shvua, v'chen banvi al-pin kaso. So here we're going to go through each of these items individually. Ha-sakhir, a poel, a worker who is going to make a claim for his wages. Ketzad, what's the situation? Amar lo, ten li schari. He goes to the balabayit and says, please pay me the wages that you owe me. Who omer? Natati. The balabayit says, I already paid you. Fahalo omer, lo natalti. He says, I did not take them yet. I did not collect my wages yet. That individual takes a shvua and collects, meaning that the wage earner over here has a right to take a shvua and collect based on the fact that he said he did not receive his wages. Yud omer, Ad shetei sham mixat hodah. Until there's a mode of mixat, there won't be a shvua. Ketzad. Amar lo ten schari chamishim dinar. Sheish li biyadecha. Says, pay me the wages that you owe me that are equal to 50 dinar. V'omer hitkabalt dinar zahav. Said, you already got paid half of them when you got a dinar zahav. Dinar zahav, according to this, is worth 25 dinar kesef. And those 25 dinar kesef is half that he's mode of mixat. In the case where he's modeh b'miksat, then we allow that to be flipped to the nishba v'notel. We allow the sakhir to take a shvua. But you must have an obligation of shvua on the balabayit before the sakhir has a right to take a shvua v'notel. If the balabayit has no obligation to shvua, then the sakhir has no right to take a shvua to demand the money. According to the Tanna Kamma, they give the sakhir the right to make this claim and to take a shvua to collect, even in a case of kofar bakol. According to Rabbi Yehuda, it's only a case where there was modeh b'miksat. There was already a shvua d'oraita. Then we allow you then to nishba v'notel. We flip the shvua and allow you to take the shvua. Over here, there's a large Tosafot, which is the Rabbeinu Tam discussing the exchange rate between gold and silver. In this case, it sounds like one dinar zahav is equal to 25 dinar kesef, which means that the ratio is 25 to 1. Gold is worth 25 times more than kesef. What the Rabbeinu Tam points out is, in the Gemara's time, as well as in the time of the Rabbeinu Tam, the exchange rate between gold and silver fluctuated between 10 and 12 times. And he says, then how does the Gemara get here to a situation in which they have a ratio, an exchange ratio of 25 to 1? And he proves it from the Gemara in Zvachim. The Gemara in Zvachim brings a stira between that which is written in Sefer Shmuel and that which is written in Divrei Yamim with regards to David HaMelech's purchase of the area of Har HaMoriah from Arabna Yebusi. And in one case, it says that he spent 600 shekelim. In the other case, it says that he spent 50 shekel. And the reconciliation between them is that 600 were dinarei kesef, the 50 were dinarei zahav. If you do that, the ratio between them is 12 times, or 12 to 1. And the Rabbeinu Tam says the same thing in our time. We never find it fluctuating more than 10 to 12 times. Has the Gemara here have a 25 times? So the Rabbeinu Tam answers and says that the dinarei zahav were twice as thick as the dinarei kesef. That means it was double the weight of a dinar kesef. So the reason that a dinar zahav yields you 25 times with a dinar kesef is because it's twice the thickness of a dinar kesef. Based on that, the Rabbeinu Tam then preserves the exchange rate of being about 12 times. It just says that the reason you're getting 25 here is because it's double the size, the gold coin. And so therefore you end up having double the value embedded in that gold coin. So what you're noting is, and many recently believe that the exchange rate should be 24 to 1, not 25 to 1, because the Gemara says 12 times with regards to Zahav versus Kesef. If you double that, it should be 24 times. So what the Rabbeinu Tam points out is, yes, it is only 24 times. You should only get 24 dinar kesef for a dinar zahav. But there's what's called a hechreya. You have to pay an extra dinar kesef for the exchange rate. That is the money that you have to pay to the money changer in order to get the exchange. In order to consolidate dinar kesef onto a dinar zahav, you'd have to pay 24 kesef in terms of underlying value. But you have to pay an extra dinar kesef for the person to accept the dinar kesef and give you the dinar zahav to make that exchange rate. So that's the fee that he charges in terms of the exchange, or the money changer would charge you as a fee. So in the end, Rabbeinu Tam says it is 12 times, and the coin is double the size, that's why you get 24 times, plus the extra coin for the exchange that is pay the money changer. That's how Rabbeinu Tam explains it. I'll send out the gold and silver exchange ratios, but the truth is that the Rabbeinu Tam's time, throughout that time of the Rishonim, the exchange rate stays in a pretty narrow band, and it seems like it was true in the time of the Gemara as well, that was the exchange rate. Obviously, in the modern era, that has changed significantly, and the exchange rate between the gold and silver has been very volatile and expanded significantly versus the 12 times that the Rabbeinu Tam was speaking about. But at least from what the Rabbeinu Tam experienced, he was perplexed as to why the Gemara would have a ratio of 25 to 1, and that's why he explains it in this manner. Nigzal, someone who was stolen from. Ketzad, what's the situation? There are witnesses that say that he went into the house of this individual to take collateral. Shelo birshut. He didn't have a right to do that. When you take collateral in the middle of a loan, you need to involve Beit Din. The Shliach Beit Din has to go in there. Creditor doesn't have a right to come and confiscate and take collateral on his own. Huomer kelai natalta. He says that you took my stuff as collateral. Huomer. And the creditor says, lo natalti. I didn't take anything. He entered the house illegally, and we have witnesses to the fact that he entered the house illegally. And the debtor says, you walked off with my stuff when you did that. Creditor says, I didn't take anything. Hu nishba vinotel. The debtor takes a shvua as to what's missing from his house, and then he collects that amount of money from the creditor, or he deducts that from the loan outstanding. Rabbi Yehuda, once again, disagrees over here. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, achitesha miksat hoda. This only works when there's already a chiyuv shvua d'oraita of moda b'miksat, then we flip it and allow the nigzal to take the shvua. Ketzad. How does that work? Amar lo shnei kelim natalta. The debtor says you took two pieces of my possession. Behu omer lo natalti al echad. And the creditor admits to one, but denies the other. He's a moda b'miksat. He'd have to take a shvua. And over here we flip the shvua onto the debtor to allow him to take the shvua. In this case, the Edim seem to corroborate the story that the Nigzal had items taken from him, because they're Edim that he went in there illegally, and he seemingly took something out from there. Since the Edim back up the story of the Nigzal, we're going to allow the Nigzal then to take the Shbu'ah to substantiate his claim that the creditor took stuff. And according to the Tanakhama, that's even when the creditor is Kufr Bakol. According to Rabbi Yehuda, that's only in the case where there was a motive in Mikzat. Nechbal, someone who was injured. Ketzat, Hayumeidim Otoch, Nechnas Tachat Yado Shalem. We have witnesses that say that these two people entered a house or a room together, and they were both healthy and in good standing. And then one of them exits, totally beaten up, and with all these injuries over him. And he says, the other guy who went into the house with me beat me up, and that's why I have all these injuries. And the other guy says, I didn't do anything to you. You fell over, you smacked your head on the desk. It wasn't me that did it to you, I didn't beat you up. This individual, again, takes a shvuah and collects because there is evidence that supports the claim of the person who was injured. Because he entered into a house totally fine. There are only two people in the house, and he exits in a way that looks like he is beaten up. So the Edim seem to substantiate his claim, and that's what gives him the right then to take the shvuah and collect, even though technically there should be no right over here. Rabbi Yehuda again says, Achiteisha miksat hoda'a. It's only true if there is a motive in Mikzat Chiyuv on the Chuvel. You hit me twice. You injured me twice. Only hit you once or only injured you once. That's a motive in Mikzat. And then, if you have that Shvuah Doraita, we will flip it on the other party. Alright, we'll do this last one and then we'll continue with the remainder afterwards. In a case where the opposing party is Chashud HaShvuah. Ketzat. Achat Shvuah Ta'idut. Doesn't matter whether the person lied under oath, and the oath that he took, or the shvuah that he took was shvuat eidut, and he was found to be lying, or it was shvuat hapikadon that he took, and he was found to be lying, or simply just a shvuat shav. In any of these cases where he's nishbala sheker, or he did an unnecessary shvuah, completely unnecessary, we see that this person doesn't take the institution of Shua seriously, and therefore he's going to lose believability in these cases. We're not going to allow him to take a Shua. So then, or one of them is a gambler, or he lends money with interest, or he races animals, or he engages in transacting in Perot Shvi'it, Shekenegdo Nishba Vinotel. The other party takes a shvuah and collects, meaning that here there is an obligation of a shvuah midoraita on this party, but this party is not trustworthy. He can't take the shvuah. So you have two options. You can either say he was supposed to take a shvuah, but he can't take the shvuah, so she has to pay. Or we can say that let's flip it on the other party. And here comes up again the idea that I mentioned before. If you don't flip the shvuah, then this individual is going to be open season. Because anybody who wants is going to make a claim against them. They'll lend them a small amount of money. Then they'll make a claim against them for a much larger sum. They'll be motive and mixed up, and they're telling the truth. But they can't take the shvuah, and they're going to be chayav. So Chamim said, let's flip the shvuah onto the other party to substantiate his claim. But if he does substantiate his claim, then he'll be able to collect. Hayushneem chashudim. If they both are suspect, they both are not trustworthy with regards to shvuah, chazra shvuah limkoma. The shvuah goes back to its seemingly place, its original location. That's not so simple. The Gemara will discuss it. Divrei Rabbi Yossi, that's how Rabbi Yossi views it. Rabbi Meir Omer, Yachloku. Since it's a mamona mutal b'safek, and neither of them can take a shvuah, they will split the difference between them. So clearly Rabbi Meir believes that they're both out of the case now because they can't take a shvuah. And since we have an argument, it's mamona mutal b'safek, you split it. Rabbi Yossi says that in a case where neither of them take a shvuah, then chazra l'shvuah l'minkoma, and we'll have a machloket amoraim as to what that means, that it went back, but someone needs to take a shvuah, and since they can't take a shvuah, they're then going to be chayav or unable to collect because of their lack of ability to take a shvuah. Alright, we're going to stop here, six lines down on the top of Memhei Amud Aleph, and we'll continue with the Mishnah, and the other case, we'll continue with the other case in the Mishnah tomorrow.